From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, this election year in Detroit.
If I was a tea leaf reader, and I am not, but if I could be for a second, I think that what we're seeing is a critical moment for African Americans living in this country, living in the state, and living in Detroit.
One voter on her community and her decision to volunteer as a poll worker amid the pandemic. Also, doing the shoe leather work to get voters to cast ballots.
The Democratic Party has not really turned out people to do things like canvassing and a lot of intensive on-the-ground work. Now, they have a good reason for that, which is the pandemic.
Grassroots groups are mobilizing to fill the gap. And today, one Michigan sheriff on the Secretary of State's directive banning guns at the polls.
My initial thought was, what the heck is she thinking? My initial thought also was disappointment in that she never reached out to any of the local law enforcement.
That story coming up. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, one sheriff is going to tell us what he's expecting in terms of security at the polls this year and why he's asking gun owners to leave the firearms at home.
Just because something's legal doesn't necessarily make it a good idea.
That's coming up a little bit later in the show, but first, there has been a lot of focus on suburban swing voters this election cycle. But for Democrats, at least as important is whether people in Democratic strongholds like Wayne County will turn out this year. Michigan Radio's Sarah Swick has been talking to some folks doing grassroots election work, and she joins us now to share what she's learned. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, April. Good to be here.
So we've talked about this before, but would you take us back to 2016 and what happened in Metro Detroit?
Yeah, so voter participation overall in Wayne County and particularly in Detroit took a bit of a dip. If you look at the number of voters, it will look like kind of a drastic decline in turnout, but there's actually fewer registered voters in Detroit in 2016 than there were in the years before. So if you look at like percentage of turnout, it was at about 48% or so versus, about 51% in 2012. So it definitely dipped. And when you consider the very small margin of victory that Donald Trump had in Michigan in 2016 and how thoroughly Democratic Wayne County and particularly Detroit is, you could probably make the argument that that made the difference in the outcome of the election.
Now, we heard again and again from prominent Democrats that they were not going to let that happen again in 2020. But I think we can say that it's mostly grassroots groups that tend to make the difference. What has been happening in Democratic and progressive circles to try to turn out the vote this year?
Well, in terms of from the sort of the top of the ticket, I mean, people like Kamala Harris and even Joe Biden to some extent have made appearances in and around Detroit. But the actual sort of, you know, the top levels of the Democratic Party, I mean, the Democratic Party has not really turned out people to do things like canvassing and a lot of intensive on the ground work. Now, they have a good reason for that, which is the pandemic. But they've also sort of taken a risk there when they say, well, most of our organizing is going to be virtual, that they are missing out on an opportunity to actually get out the vote. But that's changed a little bit later in the game. There's been sort of more focus on canvassing and turning out the vote in and around Detroit. But yeah, it's really sort of grassroots groups and, you know, civic organizations in Detroit that have picked up the slack that they're not getting as much attention from the top of the Democratic Party. So they've been doing a lot of work to turn out the vote, and they've been the ones doing most of the on-the-ground organizing and trying to get people out to the polls.
So you talked to some people who are doing the shoe leather work in Wayne County. What have they had to say about how they're reaching people with the pandemic in mind?
Yeah, I talked to a couple folks. One of them was Brandon Snyder. He's the executive director of Detroit Action, which is, he describes it as a multiracial, multi-generational community action group that really doesn't focus exclusively or not nearly exclusively on electoral politics, but that's sort of part of their mission. It's kind of funny because he actually said, when I asked him whether, you know, people were excited and engaged to participate in the electoral process, he said, no, I'm not even excited or engaged to participate in electoral politics, but I see it as a necessary part of the process as kind of harm reduction. But with all the things going on in people's lives this year with the pandemic and sort of the economic damage that's been the fallout of that, he said, to really reach people right now, you can't just talk about politics. You need to reach people where they're at.
Electoral campaigns cannot just be the standard transactional conversations that they traditionally are. You know, knock on a door, will you vote for Joe Biden?
So he said they're trying to reach out to people with phone conversations and of about, you know, 7 to 9 minutes or so, more lengthy conversations that probe a little deeply into what people are experiencing and facing right now, and sort of trying to help them see the links between that and encourage them to vote as well. I also talked to Ebony Taylor. She's the head of Mothering Justice, which is a group that advocates for mothers of color, and they work mostly on issues like Black maternal health and pushing for childcare and paid sick leave and things like that. Taylor told me that she's actually seeing a pretty good amount of energy and enthusiasm coming from the moms that she works with. But she said, you know, that a lot of Black women feel like they're taken for granted in the Democratic Party. But she also said that Joe Biden's choice of Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate is a good one, and that Black women feel acknowledged with that.
I mean, that's important when you have a group of Americans who feel absolutely marginalized, absolutely ignored, but yet we're constantly showing up.
So what kinds of things were Ebony Taylor and Brandon Snyder seeing and hearing about enthusiasm? I mean, I kind of got a taste of it from what Brandon was saying. It's like, he's not listening for love. He's listening for whether people are taking action right now. Yes.
Yeah, and his point, and I think it's a good one, is that people have a lot of concerns right now, especially in places like Detroit, where, you know, being hard hit by the pandemic and also economically, that, you know, voting might not be at the top of the list of things that people vitally feel they need to do right now.
What is on voters' minds? What kinds of things are you hearing about that are motivating people?
Well, Brandon Snyder told me that it's things like, in communities like Detroit, it's things like jobs and housing.
People are fearing they're going to be evicted. People have lost jobs. So jobs and housing are on top of mind.
And it's just sort of regular day-to-day issues and the obviously issues of racial justice and things like that. But, you know, there's just a lot of just sort of daily stresses that are pushing in on people's lives. But they try to engage them beyond that and say, hey, voting is not everything, obviously, but voting is an important part of this sort of larger community building we're trying to do. As for Ebony Taylor, she said that she's seeing, like I said, a pretty good amount of enthusiasm from the moms of color that she works with, but she said there's also just a certain level of exhaustion.
They are tired, but they're so tired that they want to see change. They're not so tired that they feel burnt out.
Do we have any early signs, Sarah, about how voter participation is going so far in Metro Detroit?
Well, we do to some extent. I mean, we know that a lot of people have voted already. Just in the city of Detroit, for example, in 2016, about a little less than 250,000 people cast ballots. And already, as of the latest information I could find from the Secretary of State, more than 100,000 people have already voted so far. And I think that's pretty typical of this large interest and enthusiasm we're seeing across the board in participation in early voting. I think it's also another thing that's really important to note in terms of whether people will turn out is that Detroit has gone out of its way to make voting a lot more accessible this year in terms of the changes to state laws where people can cast votes earlier and no reason absentee ballots and things like that. The city has set up a number of satellite voting centers where people can go and cast their ballots starting from about 3 weeks ago up right up until the day before Election Day. And that's where I ran into Alethea Pinkard. And she told me that She really loved this situation, and she's told me she's a pretty regular voter, but that with her work schedule, being able to show up and vote at a satellite voting center when she wanted to was really a good thing for her.
I love how they are allowing us to vote early, and no one is going to be excluded. And you can vote at your convenience and when you're able to.
So I think between the amount of enthusiasm we're seeing, somewhat tempered by, you know, some circumstances and stresses that people have in their life, but that combined with the greater accessibility to voting seems to point to an uptick, at least, in voter turnout this year.
Michigan Radio's Sarah Swick. Sarah, thanks so much.
No problem.
So what are you hearing? And what are you excited about as the final day of voting gets closer? We'd love to know what's happening in your corner of the world. You can always email us. The address is stateside@michiganradio.org. You can leave comments on the Michigan Radio Facebook page or just tweet at us. Our handle is @StatesideRadio. And keep those comments coming through Election Day. There is so much to keep up with between now and next Tuesday. Do I even have to mention the days beyond that? I feel like we're going to be busy for a while. Are you signed up for the Stateside podcast yet? It's all new and improved. We've been taking essential conversations that focus on what's important in Michigan. If you ever miss us on air, we'll tell you the things you most need to know about. Find the Stateside podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk with one Detroiter who has already voted and who has decided to spend her election day working at the polls.
We've had a lot of pain in our community. We've also had a lot of joy in taking care of one another. And I don't think that anything brings that together more clearly than an election day.
We'll be right back. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Michigan director for the nonprofit America Votes said something kind of stunning on Twitter yesterday. You probably knew that 3 million people in Michigan requested absentee ballots this year. But listen to this part. Nearly 300,000 of those outstanding ballots went to people who did not vote in 2016, and 21% of them were from voters of color. Candace Fortman is the executive director of Outlier Media. And she's also going to be working at the polls next Tuesday. Candace, welcome back to Stateside.
I'm happy to be here.
So Candace, you volunteered to work at the polls this year. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what led you to make that kind of commitment?
So I grew up in a household of voting day volunteers. Everybody in my household was up and doing something on an election day. My mother was Black Club president at that time, so it might have meant driving people to the polls. It might have meant getting people assigned to go work at the election polls, which for us was just at the church up the block. Bringing food, cooking meals. We were a civically involved family, and I felt like this year, not working in a newsroom for the first time in a while and not needing to be, in a newsroom until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, that I really wanted to be able to lend myself to this process. One of the things that we know is true is that we're trying to keep our elders at home as much as possible as we continue to battle COVID in our state and in our city. And so I would rather myself be there than to have our elders out. So that's what I'm going to do.
I am super curious to hear what the process has been like, if only because we're hearing these reports that more people are volunteering for the polls and everybody's aware that there's concern about there being enough people to serve everybody who wants to vote. Did you go to a meeting where they were training you?
Yes. So I have already done my training. I did it about 2 weeks ago at Wayne County Community College on Outer Drive. And I was assigned to be a ballot inspector. So I will be the person who helps you put your ballot into the tabulator, which is funny for me because that is the part as a voter that gives me the most stress, that I'm always going to mess that part up. And so I think this is karma's ultimate reward, is getting me to be in charge of that process inside of a precinct. But the training was about 2 hours long. We came in and everyone had to go and wash their hands. Everyone's temperature was taken. And then you went into a classroom where you, of course, were separated, maybe into a role just by yourself. And from there, you were trained on not just the process of how to work the tabulator, understanding, of course, you know, the process of voting, but also the process of voting inside of COVID, which is very different than it has been in any other year. Sanitizing the equipment. Can you deny someone the access to vote if they're not wearing a mask? Of course you can't. Can you deny someone access to voting if they come in and they are ill? Of course you cannot. And so making sure that everybody in the room understands that although this is a different year for our entire country, this is still a democratic process. And we need to ensure that everyone who comes in to vote can do that.
Yeah. I was wondering what the age range was like in the room. I feel like every time I've gone to vote in person, there's so many church ladies who are there doing the work and making sure that we all have the opportunity to cast a ballot. Is that the case this year?
It was not. And it was noticeable. I would say the average age of the person in the room, and this is just me, you know, looking at faces, was probably somewhere maybe in their late 20s to early 30s. There were some older women maybe, but even much younger than what we're used to. I'm used to working with ladies who are in their 70s and 80s. I think maybe the oldest person in the room might have been in their 60s.
Let's pull back a little bit and just talk about the broader climate for voting. If you had to guess among folks that you've talked to, just people that you interact with every day, how many people would you guess have already done the deed, have voted at on-demand absentee and they're done?
Well, I love to use my social media feed as a gauge for the climate of the folks that I know. And if it is a good climate, many of them have already voted. I see folks going to the clerk's office on the boulevard in Detroit. I see people who are going to the satellite offices that are situated across the city. There are about 21 of them in Detroit. I'm seeing people who have mailed in ballots, who are ensuring that they, you know, are getting their elders' ballots to drop boxes. So I'm seeing a lot of talk about early voting. I'm seeing a push for early voting. And which is an interesting thing, because we know that there is a sordid history with Black people in this country and elections. And so going into a poll really does help you ensure, at least in your mind, that your vote has been counted. And so to see this push for early voting and for absentee voting, even inside of Detroit, inside of the Black community in Detroit, has been very interesting to watch unfold. I even have a neighbor about three doors down that has a sign in their yard that says, "We voted early, so should you."
Do you hear people worrying about the chance of contagion if they have to show up to vote in person?
I don't. I am not hearing that as much as I thought I would. I think that people are going to be safe and as cautious as they can be if they do decide to go in next Tuesday. You know, in the city, people are wearing masks. People are, you know, washing their hands. They're using hand sanitizer. They're as distant as they can be because, you know, April, Detroit was hit so hard in March and April. We lost so many dear community members. And I really do think that we're in a place of care right now where we're trying to keep that from happening again. And I just don't see that same concern, because I really do believe that folks are going to do what they need to do on their end to keep themselves safe and their neighbors safe.
I was wondering how you were feeling about that, too. That was kind of sobering, what you were telling us about, you know, just reminding that someone may be sick and they may show up to vote. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be turned away. You're not worried about your own health right now?
Yes. I think that I've been worried since March, but this is bigger for me than any one illness. And that is a hard concept, even in my own head, to think about. As much as I've protected myself and kept myself away from loved ones, away from friends, this moment in our history is so critical and so important. And so I feel like it is necessary for me to risk perhaps getting sick. But I also know that I'm going to do everything I can on my end to keep myself well. I'm going to, of course, do that also, not just to keep myself safe, but to keep the folks that come into the precinct safe. I'm going to sanitize as much as I can, just like I do in my own home. And also, I'm going to, you know, keep my faith strong. I think that it has guided me over these last 7 months, and I hope that it keeps me safe while I am in that election poll.
I wanted to come back to the stat that I threw out a couple minutes ago, that nearly a quarter of the absentee on-demand ballots that were requested came from people who didn't vote 4 years ago and who were also African-American voters. Do you read anything into the tea leaves there?
Well, yes. I was just having a conversation with a friend that I would really love to see some research around voting and movements. So what did voting numbers look like during the civil rights movement? What did they look like during the Vietnam War movement? And what are we seeing that is connecting those two to this moment we're in right now? I think that, if I was a tea leaf reader, and I am not, but if I could be for a second, I think that what we're seeing is a critical moment for African Americans living in this country, living in this state, and living in Detroit, where folks might not feel as moved to vote in any given election because they might not see themselves reflected in policies and in changes that happen. But this is one of those things where folks might just think that their safety, that their protections inside of this country are on that ballot in a much more real way. And so stepping up in voting is something that they might feel encouraged to do. I'd be interested to see what happens once we get all of the numbers back. Is Black voting up? I hope it is, because we're at a critical moment in our history.
If you're just joining us today, my guest is Candace Fortman. She's the executive director of Outlier Media, but she's also a volunteer to work the polls in Detroit this year. There have been numerous efforts by both sides to win over Black voters for the presidential contest through the spring and the summer and now. Joe Biden's message has really focused on what he says is a failure on Donald Trump's part to control the pandemic. Do you see that as effective messaging for voters in the city?
I definitely think that's effective. I said earlier in this conversation that Detroiters were impacted so deeply by COVID, both the folks that we lost, the people who were sick, the people who remain sick. There are many who are still suffering from side effects, from illnesses, from the illness, and they caught it in April or May. What happened here with COVID, not just with people getting sick, but with people losing jobs, the stress on families to figure out how to keep their kids mentally happy, also in school, the toll has been heavy. And for there to not have been a national plan that unfolded when you watched, places in Europe, when you watched what happened in New Zealand and in Asian nations, and you saw what happened when a national plan was enacted, and to watch us not have that and continue to lose loved ones, continue to lose neighbors. I don't think that there are many Black people in Detroit who won't be taking that issue to the ballot box with them.
There have been moments when Joe Biden got flack for suggesting that the Democratic Party was the only real choice for Black voters.
I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't Black.
But we've also heard Donald Trump talk in ways that have assumptions baked in about what Black voters care about.
What do you have to lose? You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
Candace, what are the divisions that you see among Black voters who very often get lumped in together on both sides of the political divide?
Yeah. So I would say the education is a big one and jobs are big. There is a split inside of our communities around those who consider themselves you know, educated working class. And then those who are in the plant still, especially in a place like Detroit. And when you are talking to, when you are using employment, for instance, as a campaign message, are you talking to folks that are in the auto plants? Are you talking to union members? So for instance, if I remember the first time I told my grandfather I was going to leave a job of my own will, he thought that was the craziest thing he'd ever heard, because he had come up during through a union job at GM where he stayed for 29 years and 7 months, and then he retired. That was the world that he was brought up in. I, of course, and you don't live in that world. This is a very different America than the one that our grandparents or parents were brought up in. And so when people are voting for older Black Americans, they are still carrying this idea of sort of a unionized America where you can go and work a job and retire and live a good, prosperous life. But for those of us who have gone to college and carry a lot of student loan debt, or those of us who know that even if you are going to those union jobs, they don't pay the same as they did when my grandfather was going through GM. There are different questions on that ballot that we're trying to get answered around working in America and what it means to be a working American, and especially what it means to be a working Black American. And it is a difference between generational lines, but it's also a difference in sort of the class lines that have been set up. And for those of us who have gone to college and are carrying tons of student loan debt, there is no route to retirement that looks clear for us. That is so different than the life that my grandfather thought he was building for his family when he was working that job at GM. I think that he'd be hard pressed to see his American dream inside of my life.
There is so much information flying at people's faces right now. These all caps instructions from our leaders in our social feeds, you know, wear your mask, do physical distance. Oh, by the way, answer the census. Be there for the kids. Look out for your neighbors. Look out for the grandmas and the grandpas in your neighborhood. And I mean, there's a part of me that just wonders where voting falls in with all this, especially since some folks, you know, have challenges in their pocketbooks right now. Do you ever run across people who, you know, thinking about not voting this year? I'm curious about what they might say about that.
Yeah. So I have actually only seen one person on social media willing to say aloud that they were not going to vote, because and it didn't come down to messaging. It really came down to them not being able to vote for what they felt like was just voting for two different sides of a bad coin, where none of their immediate needs would be addressed. And this is a person who has been unemployed during this COVID crisis, and they just don't see themselves and their immediate issues reflected in any of the campaign messaging that they're hearing. And I think that doesn't get at the amount of oversaturation of messaging that folks are experiencing right now, but it does get at this critical question that both parties really have to ask themselves. And that is, how are you going to actually provide the things that your constituents are asking you for? And these are very simple things. They are asking you to keep them safe. They are asking you to keep them employed. They are asking you to keep their children well-educated. Those are not things that, you know, are outside the realm of possibility. But I think on both sides are asking for those things. How those candidates decide to approach those conversations, especially in targeted communities like, you know, the Black community, is going to be something that I think won't show up as much in this election as it is in the next 4 years. If we do not address those things, the next election that this country has is going to be a very interesting one.
Oh, Candace.
Not to say that this
one
is not.
I just can't.
Not to say that this is not an interesting election, because it certainly is.
You are the only person I know brave enough to even go there about 2024.
I tell people that I deal with crisis by moving way past the immediate crisis to the next crisis, because it just reminds me that we are always ebbing and flowing through things. There's this Frankie Beverly and May song, you know, where it talks about joy and pain. Joy and pain are like sunshine and rain. You need both. And I think that 2020 has shown us clearly that those two things come together. We've had a lot of pain in our community. We've also had a lot of joy in taking care of one another. And I don't think that anything brings that together more clearly than an election day.
Candace Fortman is the executive director of Outlier Media. You can read them online, and she will be out there working the polls on Tuesday. Candace, you take care of yourself.
Oh, thank you very much.
In a moment, Livingston County's sheriff shares how the no guns directive from the Secretary of State was probably received in some parts of Michigan.
I assure you that when she shined the spotlight on this issue, there's Joe Redneck sitting in his lazy boy saying, you know what? I'm going to go open carry just because I can and exercise my right.
So where does that leave him as the sheriff in terms of Election Day security? Stay tuned. More on that after the break. You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Political experts say that many voters appear to have hardened their opinions about who they'll support in the upcoming presidential election. But just how enthusiastic are they about their preferred candidate? As WDET's Quinn Kleinfelter reports, some voters say they're more excited about voting against a presidential contender than voting for one.
During a recent speech to University of Michigan students in Ann Arbor, live-streamed throughout the nation, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders sought to avoid a repeat of 2016, when many of his younger supporters simply stayed home after he'd lost the Democratic nomination for president.
This young generation does not vote in large enough numbers. So today, I say to the young people here in Michigan and around the country, it is not enough to complain. We got to fight back. And the first way is to vote.
It's a message that hits very close to home with 24-year-old Taylor resident Alexandra Stamper.
I'm actually from Vermont. I'm from Burlington, where Bernie was mayor, and so I know a lot of Bernie bros. But I think right now, I think people are taking Donald Trump more seriously than they took him. A lot of Democrats are taking him more seriously than they took him in 2016. It's pretty evident that the stakes are just so much higher now.
Stamper says she's excited to cast her ballot.
I really am, yes. I think it's a referendum on Donald Trump. And so I think it's maybe the most important election of my lifetime so far. My parents have said it's one of the most important elections of their lifetime. It just feels really important right now.
In Midtown Detroit, on Woodward Avenue, Melinda Hill Sangster says she's so committed to voting, she serves as an election precinct supervisor on the east side of the city. She says she's also committed to defeating Donald Trump, much more than being enthused about Democratic nominee Joe Biden.
Biden is the best of both evils. He's not as great as everybody think he is. He's got some dirty ways too, but look at Donald Trump. He has coronavirus. He just pulled his whole mask off at the White House after getting out of the hospital and did not care about anybody or anything. He really don't care.
On a nearby bench, Detroiter John Lasky says he's ready to do his civic duty and vote, even in the midst of a pandemic. But he says he's not thrilled about his choices for the White House.
So-so. No, I ain't really too excited getting out there to do it, but I'm going to vote. They're going to put in there who they're going to put in there anyway. You know, whether I vote or not, but I'm going to vote. Hopefully Biden get in there. If not, he gave it a try.
At this point, Lord help us.
About 15 miles away, outside the Dodge Park Coney Island in Sterling Heights, Valerie Cusmano is preparing to do her civic duty. She also works the polls in Richmond Township, and Cusmano makes it clear she supports how President Trump handled the economy before the pandemic struck. But she's not so excited about the president himself.
But do I particularly love this person? No. I will definitely vote for the way it was going, but do I particularly like that person? Not particularly, but I still have to vote. If you don't vote, you better not complain about anything.
It's a different story inside the restaurant, where construction worker Paul Silfko says he can't wait to get to the ballot box.
I'm pretty pumped up, but I'm always pumped up for him. I always voted since 84, never missed one yet. The way it's been run the last 4 years, the economy's really skyrocketed. We've been in the construction business. I've been there with all the different work rules with Obama and all them, and everything was slow back then. Now it's just going gangbusters. I mean, we're building buildings from Alabama all the way up here. We haven't had a day off yet.
Teddy, come here. You gotta sit down. You can't be standing up next to other people. No, sit down.
A few booths away, Sterling Heights Mayor Michael Taylor corrals one of his children. Taylor says it only takes a glance around the city to see how energized the president's supporters are.
With Trump, it's not just yard signs, it's flags. You know, the people are hanging flags from their houses. I saw in my neighborhood a guy painted Trump's name on his pickup truck. There's something you don't see every day. There is a real energy level among Trump supporters for Trump. People love him, that's for sure.
Taylor is not among those supporters. The lifelong Republican made international news when he said he regrets voting for Trump in 2016 and will now vote against him. Taylor says the president is dividing Sterling Heights, and a substantial portion of the electorate wants to vote Trump out of office. But Taylor says there is one emotion he senses all voters here share.
The mood right now is that everybody wants this election to be over, and we're not looking forward to any sort of prolonged period of time after the election to try to figure it out in the courts.
With a historically large number of Michiganders voting absentee this year, and the chance the initial results could be contested by either presidential contender, it seems likely there will be a long wait before the election results are known, no matter how enthusiastically those ballots were cast. I'm Quinn Kleinfelter.
Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson says she's going to appeal yesterday's decision by a judge who struck down Benson's directive that open carry for firearms will be prohibited at polling places this year. Benson has argued that open carry at the polls amounts to a form of voter intimidation. Gun rights activists disagree. Sheriff Michael Murphy of Livingston County recently posted a video to Facebook explaining his stance on this.
If there's intimidation, if there's shenanigans, and if there's statutes being broken, we will enforce them. It's just that simple.
And he joins us now. Sheriff Murphy, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Are you and your deputies feeling ready for elections next week?
You know, we had a meeting this morning with the not just law enforcement in our county, but also the clerks in our county, too, a Zoom meeting. And we're feeling pretty comfortable that we've got this under control, yes.
You've talked, obviously, and worked cooperatively with the clerks. At risk of, you know, we're not asking you to tip your hand, but can you tell us anything about what plans would include for keeping things safe?
Yeah, so basically, the biggest thing was just to make sure that we are all on the same page. And when I say we, law enforcement in our county, as well as the clerks. So the expectations were set from both parties. As well as we assured them that we would have extra staff dedicated to Tuesday, as well as, you know, the other law enforcement agencies in Livingston County are going to have additional staff as well. And then depending on the polling locations and number of precincts at any given place, we've got a plan to make sure those resources are allocated accordingly with some additional, not just deputies, but with some additional command staff on that particular day too. And also call was the Livingston County prosecutor, who ultimately, I mean, obviously the state, if they choose to take things that route, the AG's office can do criminal charges, but more than likely everything's going to be handled at the local level. So I you know, obviously it's important that we are in lockstep with our prosecutor as well. So it was just a real good dialogue, again, to make sure that everybody knew what the others were doing, and also to understand the expectations on both sides as well, the clerks and law enforcement.
This is a year when voters have seen and maybe even participated in big protests, either in Lansing or as part of the Black Lives Matter movement, protests around public health. Have the events of this year inspired you to take any extra steps to make sure Election Day goes safely or smoothly?
You know, we did increase our staff a little. We typically have a couple additional folks just dedicated to elections on Election Day. But yes, we have more staff involved this year than in previous, as, like I mentioned, as do the other law enforcement agencies in the county. However, that said, one of the things that makes this a little bit different is that it's an election, right? You know, the protest in and of themselves, there's a lot of different dynamics there with people from maybe not necessarily from the area, maybe folks that are antagonists, et cetera, et cetera. We don't expect any protest or anything at any of the polling locations because this is, you know, our fundamental right to vote. And everybody, no matter which side of the aisle, no matter which side of a particular issue you're on, everybody, you know, respects that. And given the fact that, you know, I don't want to say the citizenry in Livingston County is a little more a little more human than maybe some of the other things that we've seen in some other locations. That's probably a poor choice of words, but my point is I really see this as folks going to the poll, doing their job, exercising their right, I should say, and then just going home. I don't see. You know, I just don't see any issues.
Hmm. When Secretary Jocelyn Benson clarified her office's directive on open carry at the polls, can you tell us what was going through your mind when you heard about that?
Well, my initial thought was, what the heck is she thinking? And you know, I guess my initial thought also was disappointment in that she never reached out to any of the locals. She never reached out to any of the local clerks. She never reached out to any of the local law enforcement to see what, you know, we know at the local level, we know our counties, we know our townships, we know our cities best. And for, you know, her to come down and say, this is how we're going to do things. I guess I was disappointed. I was also disappointed in the fact that this comes, you know, 2 weeks out from an election. And then they use the excuse of, you know, we're anticipating whatever, you know, and because of the plot to kidnap the governor, somehow that ties into that, which I just don't agree with. But I will say this, and I will give her the benefit of the doubt that her motives were genuine in her comment that, you know, she wants to ensure the best she can and do everything in her power that she can to ensure safe and secure voting. And I appreciate that. And listen, at the end of the day, that's what everybody wants. That's what law enforcement wants. That's what all the clerks want as well. So we're all in this to make sure that that happens. But you can't sit in Lansing and say that without having contact with your local folks. That just doesn't make any sense to me. And quite frankly, had there been much thought put into this thing, she would have been better off just not saying anything because, listen, open carry is nothing new, right? I mean, we've been through how many elections and we've had folks show up with open carry. We've handled it at the local level. The clerks make sure the people get in, get their ballot, they go vote, and then they leave. It's just that simple. So, you know, to shine a big spotlight on this issue that didn't need a spotlight shined on it, I think was would have been more appropriate.
In the video in which you explained your position, you stated that you didn't feel it was the business of a sheriff to enforce a directive that came through the Secretary of State's office. But at the same time, you also tried to dissuade folks who might feel compelled to make a show of open carry at the polls next Tuesday. Can you tell us a little more about your line of thought on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, let's face it. The fact of open carry in and of itself legally is not intimidating, right? And that's where, you know, people are trying to say, well, it's intimidating. I see somebody open carry, I'm intimidated. Well, again, that in and of itself is not against the law. So my point with that whole thing is this. I assure you that when she shined the spotlight on this issue, as I mentioned before, there's Joe Redneck sitting in his lazy boy saying, you know what? I'm going to go open carry just because I can and exercise my right, which, of course, you can. However, I asked and I would try to dissuade anybody from doing that just because it does make folks uneasy. And leave if you're worried about protection, that's what our job is. That's what law enforcement's job is. So are there going to be people that will show up to the polls with open carrying? Yes, there are. And they will be treated just like everybody else. They'll be given their ballot. They'll run their ballot through the machine and then they'll go home. But my point was, just because something's legal doesn't necessarily make it a good idea. And that was my point with that. So if you weren't thinking about open carrying and you decided to just to kind of thumb your nose at the Secretary of State, please don't do that. If you were thinking about carrying concealed, then leave the thing concealed. Don't make an issue. Go in and do your ballot and get out of there. If you're doing it because you think that somehow the polling locations are going to be unsafe and, you know, you feel unsafe or you feel the need to protect other people, don't do it, because we've got this covered from a law enforcement perspective. So that was really kind of the message I was trying to get out there. And, you know, really, frankly, at the risk of upsetting the both sides, you know, your pro gun people and your not pro gun people. But that's my stance as a sheriff. And that's I said what I said and I stand by it.
Right. You know, there are all manner of things that might happen at a polling place that are not what we would want, but which are perfectly legal. I mean, I guess a person could show up partly dressed. A person could show up at a polling place sick. And our understanding is that they won't be turned away, that everyone does have that right to vote. You know, a person might even show up sick and unmasked and coughing on people. It's clear that open carry makes some people feel much safer, but that it doesn't make everyone feel safe. I mean, I've seen people show up for marches or protests with highly modified AR-15s. You know, it's a little different vibe than someone just carrying a handgun, for which they're, you know, they have their permit, fully permitted. Can you give us some insight into how your folks and the county's folks will be making those judgment calls if somebody were to phone in from a polling place and say, hey, there's somebody here and folks are feeling nervous about it?
Yeah. So as far as the person that shows up, you know, coughing and hacking, that's going to be, I'm hoping that the clerks would take the lead on that and keep as much distance as they could with everybody else, get that person in, voted, and get them out of there, and then, you know, disinfect, you know, and get on with the day. And frankly, I would hope that the same thing would happen with the guy or gal that decides to strap an AR on their chest and walk in. Get them in and get them out, maybe even move them to the front of the line if that's what it takes. Because, you hate to make a bunch of accommodations for folks, but on the same token, the longer that sick person or the longer that person with a rifle slung over their chest is in the polling location, that's just going to add to that angst. But we would, in both of those scenarios, should we, law enforcement, be called, that would be our recommendation. And there's nothing illegal. We can't force, the clerks can't force somebody to mask, but we would certainly, again, appreciate the fact that they would do that. Again, just because it's a good idea doesn't mean that it should be done. And I would hope that somebody that's sick wouldn't show up at the polls or would reach out to the clerk, you know, right there ahead of time and say, hey, listen, I'm not feeling well. Can you move me to the front of the line? I'll do what I got to do to get out of here a little bit quicker. You know, somewhere along the line in this whole thing, we've lost sight of common sense. And it's not on just this particular issue. It just seems like as a country, you know, a little bit of common sense and a little bit of courtesy and forethought is just gone for whatever reason.
Sheriff Michael Murphy of Livingston County, thank you, Sheriff, so much for your time. I hope you and all your staff stay safe next week.
Thanks, you as well. And we're hoping we close the books on Tuesday with an uneventful day.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.